Welcome to Your Funeral Coach Talks, a bi-monthly podcast hosted by Lisa Bowie, founder of Your Funeral Coach, a consulting and mentoring company serving the funeral, cremation, and cemetery profession. Listen in today to the Elevating Women in Funeral Service series as she interviews thought leaders and difference makers in her profession.
Welcome, listeners. We're here today with one of my favorite people in funeral service. In fact, one of my favorite women in funeral service, Ellen Wynn McBrayer. Ellen, welcome. Glad to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. Sure is.
We're super excited because you are one of the role models for women in our profession. And I want everyone to hear a little bit more about your background. So I'm going to share some of that. So here we go. So Ellen, you are a third generation, you're president and CFO of Jones Wynn Funeral Homes and Crematory and Meadowbrook Memorial Gardens in Douglasville and Villa Rica, Georgia. And your firm is 72 years old this year, is that correct?
That's correct.
Wow, that's yes. Really cool. That's awesome. And you serve, of course, with your mom, your husband, Scott, as well as a large variety of funeral directors and embalmers in your family business. And you're kind of outside of Atlanta. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're about close to 30 miles west of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's kind of like a suburb, I suppose, but it could be a whole different community out there. Well, here's more about Ellen. She is the first female in her family business to become a licensed embalmer. That's pretty cool. She's been serving on a variety of National Funeral Directors Association committees since 2007. And in 2009, she was honored to be named one of Georgia's top 40 under 40 by Georgia Trend Magazine, which is an esteemed recognition of accomplished individuals throughout the state of Georgia. And she was chosen as one of the top five funeral directors in 2021 in the country by the American Funeral Director Magazine. The National Funeral Directors Association just recently, when we were all together at the Professional Women's Conference in San Antonio, named Ellen as the very first winner of the NFDA Inspiration Award in 2023. Currently, Ellen is doing something new and very cool. She's an at-large candidate for NFDA's Board of Directors this year in 2023. And I don't know the exact numbers, but from my count, I think you might be the third woman to serve on NFDA Board of Directors. There might have been one or two more. So if you think about how old NFDA is and the history, that's probably not enough. We need more women, don't you think?
Well,
thank
I
you
hope
for serving.
So.
The
vote will be next week at the NFDA Leadership Conference. So we'll find out who the next two are. I'm up against some other very strong, powerful funeral directors. So hopefully if y'all, speak life into my name.
Well, we certainly will. And I will be there and we will speak it loudly. So you are an experienced funeral director and professional and owner. So I think, you have my vote. Of course.
Thank you.
Anyway, let's talk more about you. Tell us more about your background, your family business. How did you get started in funeral service? What keeps you there? All those good things. Tell us more.
Growing up in funeral service, watching my parents, take care of our community and broken hearts. My grandmother was the first female to be licensed in the state of Georgia. And so that was a big accomplishment. And then my mom and dad, to follow in those footsteps. I went to Auburn University. My plan was I was going to go into be a marketing director for the Atlanta Hawks. That was my dream. And then I was going to go into funeral service following.
Oh, cool.
Dad passed away of a massive heart attack while I was at Auburn. That was when, it sped up my purpose for life. And that was when everything sort of came
well,
into.
I think so. You were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Came into 2020 18, vision.
19 years old. How old were you, Ellen, when your dad died?
I was in my 20s, just early 20s. So very young. I was late.
Almost
finished.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was,
You hadn't gone to mortuary school.
I had not. No, I had not. I had always had a dream of going at some point, but that sped my timeline up. I wanted to come home then, and my mom said, "Nope, you're going to finish Auburn." So I did, and then here I am now. So
Well, good for your mom, but that had to be hard to go back to school right after your dad's funeral and finish your last year of college, you know, thinking about what am I going to do next? And then hear your mom, was she active in the business? She was active in the business with your dad, right? So that might have helped a little bit. Yeah.
She definitely
so
was.
So then when you go to mortuary school.
That's right. And they had just actually built our second location in Douglasville in 1999 and got it off the ground right before he passed away. So she was very, very active. And then I went to mortuary school. And while I was in mortuary school, started dating Scott. And he said, you know, I feel like I'm being called in the funeral service. I said, are you sure? We work all the time. It needs to be a calling. And he was a school teacher at the time. And it was his right calling.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
an excellent funeral director.
Nice.
He's wonderful.
That's awesome. Well, you know, it's hard to be in a family business with your husband, but I'm sure you both have different roles and you kind of see each other. And then do you have a rule, like when you go home at night, you don't talk about the business, or does it kind of go home with you?
You know, I think we don't have rules other than, you know, we just communicate, open communication. And if we are, you know, just need family time, we just like, hey, let's pause this. Because sometimes it takes maybe talking about the kids at work and or talking about how to care for families at home to make us, you know, a family serving family since 1950. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, maybe
sure,
we do need
sure.
rules. But so far, this, well, that, you know.
We do. You know, my dad died from a massive heart attack, too. He was away at a funeral directors convention in 1987 with OGR. And I just remember that phone ringing at 2:00 in the morning. And I'd been licensed for 8 years and sitting there going, what do I do next? Right. And mm-hmm. so you're experienced in funeral service and you still don't know what to do. So I can't imagine what mm-hmm. it was like for you in college. I had to go hit the phones afterwards and go call my little brother who was away at college and go wake up my other brother and tell my grandmother. And oh my gosh, this is the hardest thing I ever had to do. But you know, over time you learn, I think you become more empathetic once you understand mm-hmm. what grief and loss is like when mm-hmm. you go through it yourself at a younger age. Because as young funeral directors, I don't know if I actually could understand grief and loss as much until I lost my dad. I read about it a lot. You know, I read books by Earl Grolman and Dr. Alan Wofelt. But you really, I think, have to experience it. Not the easiest way to do it when you're young. So good for you. But you've had some other challenges since you and your husband came into the business. Tell us about your son and what you all went through when he was born.
Yes, that, you know, and I feel like what you just said about grief definitely does prepare your heart to help others. But it also helped prepare myself for, you know, our first, we had, you know, one healthy son. He was 5 at the time that we got pregnant with our second child. And then, you know, we were told at, you know, halfway through, that there were going to be some complications, only to find out that, you know, the doctors prepared us that when he would be born, he wouldn't survive. And so extremely difficult. And one thing that we didn't talk about is how we were going to prepare ourselves emotionally for the worst case scenario, but still hope for the best case. So we did plan his funeral. My husband did look at his casket and we planned the details because, you know, I knew how it felt to lose my father, but to try to be there for a 5-year-old who grew up in funeral service, if what the doctors were saying were true, we felt like the best way to do that would be to plan a funeral and hopefully never use it. And so that journey was very difficult. We're still on it. Praise the Lord. He was put on hospice for his first birthday. So the hospice nurse,
they
came to the hospital and just the whole experience was just, was tough and emotionally impossible. But, you know, that's why I really believe in the funeral service family too, because, you know, funeral directors across the country, you know, just were so amazing to us. And then our local friends were also wonderful, but our journey ended up leading us to Boston, you know, and after a 11 hour surgery in Boston, we stayed a whole month, you know, when came off of hospice. And so that journey has been difficult. He's now, he's fixing to be a teenager. he's lived longer than anybody with all of his conditions, and he's got a fight for life. Awesome. And he actually just received and was awarded one of the youth heart ambassadors for the American Heart Association. So that's a big honor. So he'll get to tell his story as well this year. So, but that prepared us and helped us.
That's
you know, in a different way, to know what it's like to be on hospice. You know, that you know, that does something to you, to grow you as a human as well, to be able to help others. So.
Well, you know, it's great that you're using that as a way to learn and understand. I so admire both of you, both you and Scott, for how strong you had to be during that time. At the same time, you know, you're still back at home at times serving families while you're facing a potential loss of your own child. And mm-hmm. and I think that's got to be the scariest, hardest thing mm-hmm. any parent would ever go through. It really mm-hmm. is. And supporting each other, I'm sure your faith, help from your family, but still going through it is just, mm-hmm. you could look back now and say that was a learning experience, but gosh, I don't know how y'all did it. And that can create some inner strength in you now, I think, because you're probably sitting there going, please, God, how can I do this, right? And then coming back to the funeral home and serving other families when maybe they had a loss of a child similar to your child's age. I mean, those are defining moments in our professional life when I think it makes us stronger, but it also can help us, I think, appreciate what we have, right?
That's so, very, very true.
Cool. Well, I'm so glad.
And in a humorous way, you learn what not to say to families. You know, when you go through tragic situations, you realize it really quick that the best thing to say is really nothing at all, just to be there for them. So,
I agree. Oh gosh. Yeah. Sayings where people used to say,
I was going to add to it, you know, looking back, it's hard to believe how we did survive it. And then the Lord provided us twins as a surprise. We have twin girls that, so we have four children now. So I laugh and I say, you know, I feel like God, maybe we'll call one of the four into funeral service, but yes, laundry's never done.
Oh my gosh, Ellen and Scott. So not only did God challenge you with your second son's health, he gave you twins on top of it.
So, a surprise.
Well, lady, I have to say, you are a survivor. How old are the twins now?
They're 10. Both of them are 10, and they are
twin little girls.
They're very strong, independent women already.
Yay. Well, of course, they come from a strong, independent woman business, from your mom and grandmother to you, right? I think that's cool. Pass it on. That's great. So how do you and Scott balance that life between home with four children and work? How do you balance that? How do you find time for yourself personally and as a couple? How do you do that? I know work-life balance is a real topic today. We're post-pandemic as we record this. It's 2023. I'm hearing statistics from Gallup that 80% of our workforce, people in the workforce today, are having mental health issues. And there's another like 60 to 65% who are ready to leave their jobs. So they're looking for meaning and purpose. How do you and Scott find that?
I think when we do, we're going to write a book about it. But in all seriousness, you know, that is a, you know, logistical challenge. It goes back to, it takes a village. You know, I think having surround yourself, you know, being a leader and being in funeral service doesn't mean that you do it all yourself. Like funeral directors could do back in the olden days, like my grandfather and my grandmother, they could do so much. But I think the bigger question is that having a work-life balance means having a strong team around you, you know, and our Jones Wynn and our Meadowbrook family team create that, you know, and create that ability to have a team and be there. And we all, you know, if one of us are having a moment where we need to take a step back, the other one steps in and steps up. And so I think it goes back to the old saying, it takes a village. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you and Scott find time for vacation at all?
We do. It's usually a leadership conference or an NFDA convention, but we do.
Yeah, I remember those days. Well, we don't get much vacation, but hey, we got this great conference to go to in a cool place like Arizona in the middle of the summer, right? Or where are we going to be this fall? New Orleans? New Orleans is early September. We might as well just, yeah, we're going to be sweating that's it, right. But that's okay. Well, good. I'm glad you're all finding time for each other, because I think that's very, very important. You know, you stated in some information you sent to me that your purpose is funeral service, and it's who you are, and it's founded on all your generational principles, yet open-minded to growing and adapting for the future. I'd like to spend a little time on what you think the future is going to be in funeral service, Ellen. I mean, there's lots of changes going on. We obviously have all made it through the worldwide pandemic. There's staffing challenges, hiring challenges, challenges with the families we're serving who have maybe gone through just some enormous times and are rethinking what they want in funeral service. And if it involves us or doesn't involve us, which is kind of scary for some people in certain markets. So where do you see funeral service going in the future?
You know, I think everything you just described is where we're going. I think families and the generations that are coming, they have all of the information and data that they need at their fingertips. You know, there's no mystery to our industry. A lot of people have already experienced a death. And so I think what it looks like, it goes back to service. And if the service that we provide is meaningful to the families that we're serving. So what that looks like is, you know, I feel like, you know, from 1950 to now, you know, funeral service has changed. But the one thing that has not changed is if a funeral director, we do our job well to reach a heart and to help them start a healthy grief journey beyond the service and beyond, you know, a cremation, and we can provide value, then families will still be needed in the community. What that looks like, what our overhead looks like, may change and adapt. You know, we just recreated, we had a flood this Christmas, and we recreated, you know, an entire space to where we can have a witness of cremation now for the different, you know, cultures and the different, you know, the people want to know. They don't want to fear the unknown. They want to be able to possibly even see, you know, our crematory without standing beside it. So, you know, what that looks like, it may change what our facility looks like. But I think if it goes back to the heart of service, and if we can keep showing families that, then we'll still have a relevant space in this world. So.
I hear you. I think that's so important. I think we have to lead by example in helping them find a way to honor their loved one's life in a special way that has meaning to them. And sometimes that can be a challenge when they say, I don't want a funeral, right? Mm-hmm. I don't see a need to view the body, right? So what do we say to them when those kind of things come out, and how we better serve them and help convince them? I think it's a convincing. We have to educate them why seeing their loved one, why having a service and ceremony will help them heal. You know, I think that's important. Well, you said something else. So I love this part, that serving families with empathy and compassion is a constant, but time and culture is changing and technology is advancing at a mind-bending pace. I know as a baby boomer, sometimes I struggle with that technology, right? But we're learning. You think it's imperative for funeral service and NFDA to take advantage of technology, especially when it comes to handling the media for the benefit of those we serve. Help me understand what you mean by that.
You know, I think, you know, my dad always said the only thing constant in this world is change, but nobody really likes change. But for me, I think we learned during COVID the need for connecting, similar to how we are now. And I think what that looks like moving forward is, you know, we always have to operate as if somebody's filming us or watching us. So I think take the fear out of it, take the, you know, you use those to your advantage to be able to reach people. For example, you know, it's harder and harder to recruit into our industry. So right now, what we've done is we've used a platform to where we've created a staff portal for our team to sit down, and during their orientation phase, when the new person and a new team member is hired, they get to watch who we are, what we stand for, by video. You know, so it's not like reading a manual or handbook, but it's personalized just for our funeral home family. And if they don't like that, then they have a choice to stay or go, to help, you know, onboard either faster, to set expectations faster, versus just kind of learning by trial and error. You know, it's like, here we have a specific way now. And so far that's gone very, very well. But just we're in such a fast paced world now, sitting down and having staff meeting every Wednesday morning, you know, it's just tough as fast as we're all moving. So using technology to your advantage is always helpful, but it's got to be specific to who you are and what your company and families need in the community.
Sure.
Well, and showing them by video, and I noticed on your website, you have some wonderful video on your website, by the way. If you would like to go to Ellen's website, we'll talk about how to get a hold of her and get to their website a little bit. But I love how you did that and the use of video. I think it's very educational, as well as it kind of does set the standard for how you serve families and what they can expect of you. So I really, really appreciate that. I thought that was wonderful. Now let's talk about the media. You know, the media is not doing us any favors. So how can we get better with how we represent ourselves as a profession with the local media, national media? You know, how do we get our story out there that we really believe in serving families from the heart when, you know, they hear things at FTC hearings that don't sound really great about our profession and how we're all about the money versus we're really... those of us that are here and working in the business feel it's more about the heart. What would you say to the media if they come and ask you, you know, why should we have funerals and you guys just rip people off? What would you say? This is a hard question to answer a lot, but they do that. They'll stick a microphone in your face and a camera. So what do you say and how do you deal with media, or what do you suggest we do as a profession to better handle the media and our kind of the perception of who we are?
I feel like you've wrapped several different topics up into one question. So the first one I would like to answer that's great. No, it's a fantastic topic. I think the first one I'd like to talk about is, you know, the NFDA does an amazing job with a spokesperson team. I'm on that team to really try to get a positive message out. But if you're not on the committee, and another way that NFDA does is if you go to their website, they've prepared, you know, a way to do news release, do media and news releases. So I feel like the best way to tell our story is to tell our story, and do that consistently, sort of like brand marketing, like what we're doing and why it's positive, to try to tell the message, write articles. You know, NFDA has a lot of material that you can use as a member to help guide you if you're not, you know, accustomed to writing and really tell the story to answer questions. You know, my husband and I write an article for the local papers, you know, frequently asked questions. And it's surprising to see how many people really want more information. So, you know, but the second part is if I have a news media put a camera in my face, you know, I would explain to them that it's not about, you know, for the vast majority of funeral directors, we would do this for free, that it's about a heart. It's about the little boy whose father died, and 2 years later, his uncle that became his father, like, you know, image, you know, he also died. It's about holding that child's hand. It's about helping reach a heart, one broken heart at a time, to start a healthy grief journey, especially in this phase after the pandemic. We're in a national crisis, I believe, of mental health. And that we just have to bring awareness. And if they have a, you know, there's always the exception to every rule. And if there is something that has spawned the media to ask such, you know, harsh questions, you know, you just have to remind them, you know, that for every one bad story, there's a million stories of funeral directors who have gone the extra mile in whatever it's taken to really help hold someone's hand and heart through the worst times of their life. So.
I love that. I love that. I love how you said that. This is going to be recorded. Everybody go write that down, because I think it's important that we be able to sound just like Ellen when talking to the media. I too was on that spokesperson committee years ago. And I remember the training in Washington, D.C. and our coach had some serious questions to ask us, which I just ask you probably one of them. And it's kind of scary when you got that camera and that microphone in your face. And I spoke to reporters from all over the country who would call about, you know, certain incidences that happen in our profession. We're not perfect. We have people in our profession that make mistakes, and it's very sad. Some of them are bad. I think we have to hold our heads up high and be able to say, but that's the minority. This is the majority of how funeral directors and funeral home owners feel and serve families. So good for you, Ellen. Thank you for that service. And I know it's not an easy one, because at any time your phone rings, and it could be on a Sunday night, and they're facing deadlines on Monday morning, and they want an answer right now, don't they? So right. Good for you. Hey, let's talk a little bit about you personally again. I'm gonna switch gears here, because we've talked about the profession and what it needs to do more of and probably less of. I'd like to hear for some of our listeners who are some of our young funeral directors, women especially, who are wanting to be an owner someday, possibly, or a manager someday in their careers. What kind of advice do you have for them as a leader, how to grow themselves as a leader? How'd you do it?
So, you know, I think the first, that's a fantastic, you know, question. I think the first place I would start is to just remind people that confidence is not a personality trait. It's a skill set, right? And so, you know, if you have a dream and it doesn't scare you, it's not big enough. And that, you know, that when you make a mistake or you have a growing space, you know, and you fall on your face, that's a learning moment to grow yourself. So, you know, I feel like, you know, confidence, grow your confidence, make that like a goal. Listen, you know, my dad always said, honey, you got two ears and one mouth for a reason. If you listen, then you'll know more in the end. And then lead by example. Hard work can't be matched by any leader or anybody that's rivaling you. Just hard work, and don't be scared to do anything that you put your mind to, and hard work turns into talent. So.
That's awesome. I'm so glad you said that. You know, my dad said the same thing. Hey, Lisa, you know, like, engage brain before mouth. Use the ears first. What's in between? Those are, our dads had to be so much alike. You know, that's funny.
They probably would say that. They might have even known each other. That's right.
Maybe they, bet. I'm sure they did, especially with their ownership being second generation in their firm. I absolutely believe that. I love that. I love what you just said. So tell me about your personal goals for Ellen going forward. I know you probably have business goals. You're working to become elected on the NFDA board, but what about you personally? Wellness goals, taking care of yourself, business goals in your own company. What kind of things are you working on now?
Drink more water, I think, is my first goal in life. So is to really drink more water, exercise on a more consistent basis for personal growth. You know, and I just, you know, to not sweat the small stuff, right? And knowing what that is, what the small stuff is. Goals for our business, I want to grow our training videos and our training series. I want to grow our service beyond what we already do. The one thing that I do love and embrace is healthy change. I really want to be able to still remain the cutting edge and being able to offer to families stuff that they don't know that can be offered, you know, but that's done by listening to the community, listening to what our families need, and trying to figure out a way to make that possible. Those are, you know, our goals, you know, as a company, and to keep a healthy growth and to have a team members that, you know, I've learned, if I could go back and tell my younger self one thing, and it would be that trust is earned, you know, kind of like the quote, you know, trust, but verify. You know, I think going into it when I was younger, I trusted, you know, freely, but I think the older I get, I think one thing I'm really advise anybody coming forward is trust, but verify, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
That's one of my favorite phrases. You know, that came out of a speech that Ronald Reagan gave back in the day when he was president of the United States. Yeah. And he was, I think he was dealing with, was it the Russians or the Chinese? And he was speaking about one of those two countries that he didn't trust. So I love that phrase. I too was very, very trusting when I was a young funeral director and a young owner after my dad died, because I didn't know who to turn to. So I had to rely on some of my dad's friends and some other women in the business. You know, let's talk about that as far as a mentor for just a moment. You've had some female mentors, I'm sure, over the years, and one probably your mother, who had some impact on you. What did you learn from your mentors over the years that you feel you're still bringing into the business today?
What a great question. And to go back, you know, I learned from my mom that that anything is possible, even when it looks, you know, like it's not. You know, when she stood up, you know, my dad passed away on their wedding anniversary weekend, their 40th wedding anniversary. And she, you know, that had two funeral homes and cemetery on her shoulders, you know, and she stood up in front of our staff and our funeral home family that morning of his funeral and said, "We're going to hold this steady in the water." She said, it may be tough. It will be tough at times, but we're going to survive this. And so I feel like I've learned that if you put your mind to it, nothing can stop you. It may look different than you anticipated in the end, but it's exactly where you and God wanted you to be. And so I think that I've learned that through her and through my grandmother and my grandfather. You know, they didn't have, you know, anything to their name, lived in a funeral home, and watched both of them, you know, kind of do funeral service together. And to watch them even take a step back as my parents, you know, started the second generation. And then, you know, Valerie Wages, you know, she was a mentor of mine.
Love Val.
Just, you know, any, I think the phrase, whatever it takes, right? Whatever it takes. If it, my mom, you know, if whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And another thing I really learned from my mom is, you know, she looked at me at a very young age and said, a good idea can come from anywhere and anybody. And so no matter what you do in life, you know, if you're the president of, you know, IBM, you have to listen to everybody, because, you know, the person in charge of the elevators or, you know, in charge of the janitor system, anybody can have an amazing idea that can change the face of the course of a company, no matter how large or small. And I have learned that to be very true. So if you just listen, like combined it with what my dad said, if you just listened and adapt it, and you know, don't act swiftly, but act confidently, and logic over emotion also helps. This is another good phrase I've learned through the years.
Logic over emotion. I love that. I'm writing that down right now. Logic over emotion. That's so true. But what great role models you've had over the years. So I'm writing down all these different quotes from your parents. these are awesome. And so what is your quote that you say? What do you probably repeat those things, plus trust but verify, right? Any other quotes that you say to your kids today?
Yes. I tell my kids all the time, you know, peer pressure is real in this world, and, you know, only dead fish go with the flow. So stand up for what you believe in.
Dead fish go with the flow. Okay. That's right. Awesome. Do you like to fish?
I do. I also like to fish. Yes, definitely. I'm not very, that's it helps awesome. Me with my patience. Awesome. I'm not very patient. So it helps with patience.
Yeah, me either. That's my husband good took me trout fishing once. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. you're constantly changing. That's right. We want that fish now, and we want it on the end of our hook, and then we want to just take it home and cook it for dinner. So sitting there for long periods of time waiting on the fish is not easy, but only dead fish go with the flow. I love this, Ellen. Thank you so much for being with us today. This has been so much fun. We have to do this again. We'll wait until you get settled on the NFDA board, and we'll come back and we'll see what's going on in funeral service, and we'll spend some more time together. Wonderful. So it's not if, it's when. And I just look forward to seeing you again, of course, at more professional women's conferences, NFDA meetings, and so forth and so on. So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today before we sign off?
I would just like to thank you for all your hard work and all you do. You know, it's to have, you know, one of the you know, the pioneer and living legends ask you on a podcast. You know, it's humbling and exciting. And I just really appreciate you taking time to spend with me. It's just a joy, and all you do and all you've accomplished in your time span, you know, you're just, you're awesome. So appreciate you very, very much. So.
Well, thank you. The feeling is mutual towards you as well. We both have a lot of commonality, just a few, you know, just a generation apart, but we're both third generation females who took over the family business after our fathers died, and at very young ages, both in our 20s and 30s. I was only 30 when Daddy died. It's not easy being a woman in funeral service, but I'm super excited to see so many more women coming into the profession today. And I just hope that the employers out there are appreciating them, coaching them, mentoring them, helping them become better, as I know you are, because I've looked at your website and I've seen so many wonderful women on that website that you employ as well. So Ellen, if anyone wants to talk to you further, get your opinion on things, just seek you out as a mentor, how can they get a hold of you? Give us your contact information and your company website,
yes,
please.
Yes. And before I do that, I have one more advice for you know, a young female came to me and asked me advice, and she said, how do I become the best female in funeral service? I said, well, you know, I think if one thing I've learned in life is to respect the differences between men and women, but be the best person for the job, right? Focus on being the best candidate, right, the best funeral director. And if you do that, then the sky is the limit. And so I would love for anybody to talk to me. I can give you my cell phone, and you can go to my website or my email address. And my cell phone is 678-410-2548. I'm texting. I do better at texting, probably than email, but my email is also ellen@jones-wynn.net. So, or you can call our funeral homes, from our website, and I'll either answer or I'll get the message. So.
There you go. Well, you and I have been texting just to get ready for this podcast. So we come from that generation. My children are texters. I started with a BlackBerry back in the day and continue texting my kids. That's how we communicate, you know, when we're so far away from each other. We're always texting. I know it is. Except for the arthritis in the hands, it starts getting as you get older, right? Watch the texting.
That's right.
Hey, great to be with you. You know, hi to Scott, and we'll see you soon at the Leadership Conference. In sunny and warm Arizona. And I know we'll see you again at NFDA. I appreciate you, Ellen, and thank you for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. Great seeing you as well.
We hope you enjoyed today's Your Funeral Coach podcast and will join Lisa Bowie and her guests again soon. Let us know if there are any topics you would like to hear more about. For more information on future shows, please go to yourfuneralcoach.com. If you enjoyed the show, consider giving us a 5-star review. Thank you.